Well, we greet each one again this evening in Jesus' name. I never, in my 30-some years of ministry, had the responsibility to end a series of meetings that I wasn't involved in starting, and it feels a little strange. I don't know what all you heard this week, but the Lord laid on my heart to share a picture of heaven that Jesus revealed to us. I invite you to turn to Matthew chapter 20. Very familiar account, but this is a passage that has become very special to me, as I felt like I, at some point a number of years ago, felt like I understand a little bit more what was maybe happening here. As the American-oriented, enterprising people, we can look at a passage like this that is declared as being very fair, and we can look at it and say, at least I did for many years, looked at it and said, well, what was fair about that? It seemed very unfair. And before we read chapter 20, we want to note that verse 1 starts with a 4. The kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man. It is a continuation of the thoughts. There was a very reward-conscious Peter, very concerned about what heaven holds for him, because he forsook all and he followed, and he was concerned what's the next phase going to look like? What's Jesus' kingdom going to hold for him? And Jesus told him that the reward is going to be exceedingly fair for those that have had exceedingly difficult life experiences. The reward is going to be exceedingly fair. Then he says, for the kingdom of heaven is like. And he tried to explain the economy of the kingdom of heaven that we can just hardly relate to as we think of earth economies. He says the people that need to leave father and mother, houses and lands, they're going to receive up to 100-fold what they sacrificed in life. And they'll have that, not only that, but they'll have the bonus of eternal life. This is going to go on indefinitely. You know, things we get preoccupied are going to eventually, here on earth, are going to eventually stop and burn unless it's kingdom focused. That's the only way we can translate our reward into heavenly experiences. And reward is not going to be in proportion to position and honor here. That translates to position and honor over there, where heaven is just an advancement of the ladder that started here. We don't need to be concerned of what rung we are on the ladder here, because the kingdom of heaven is going to be very, very different. People that are nobodies maybe in the world's eyes here are going to be extremely somebodies over there because of their experiences that God is going to acknowledge and reward them for. All right, I'd like to read chapter 20, starting at verse 1. He says, let me describe it this way. The kingdom of heaven is like. For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said unto them, go you also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, I will give you. And they went their way. And again he went out about the sixth hour and the ninth hour and did likewise. And about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing idle, and saith unto them, why stand ye here all the day idle? They say unto him, because no man hath hired us. He saith unto them, go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. So when even was come, the Lord of the vineyard saith unto his steward, call the laborers, and give them their hire, beginning from the last unto the first. And when they came, they that were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more. And they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the good man of the house, saying, thou hast let these have These last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden in the heat of the day. But he answered them and said, Friend, I do thee no wrong. Didst not thou agree with me for a penny? Take that thine is, and go thy way. I will give unto this last, even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? Is thine eye evil, because I am good? So the last shall be first, and the first last, for many shall be called, but few chosen. We in our Western culture thinking want to agree with the early comers and say this wasn't a fair situation. Some people worked all day, and they got the same pay as some who only worked for 1 hour. I mean, how fair is that? Who would choose to endure the afternoon sun in an orchard and get the same wages at the end of the day as those that were just there for an hour when it was cooler? And what's fair? Get the same? How could this householder claim fairness? And if this is to represent excitement for us as Christians for what the future holds, what's exciting about this? I don't know how it works in your employment, but I think it's a pretty universal thing in America that people like to be paid proportionate to their investment of time, proportionate to their experience, proportionate to how they put themselves out to get a project done. If we operated like this landholder, I think companies across America would have the HR would be very, very busy trying to keep everybody happy and keep everybody working. If the boss would give everybody the same, the part-timers and the full-timers get the same. Some come and just work Friday and some work all week and they get the same. And yet this householder claimed he was being very fair, and they were being critical to even question his fairness. So how do we put this all together as Jesus is trying to explain to us the kingdom of heaven? How do we put this all together? My title is A Generous Householder. I'd like to examine the generous householder tonight. I'd like to start by looking at the marketplace that this generous householder went to so many times in the day. It says he went there early in the morning. Now, the marketplace was a very interesting place, and I'm going to just take a little bit of time to talk about that. It was very multifunctional. When we think of marketplace, we maybe think of Ritz Auction, or we think of Green Dragon, where it's just about selling goods. But the marketplace in Bible times was, yes, they did buy and sell stuff, obviously. It was a place where you could go and get your pet rabbit, probably if you wanted one, like we would do at Green Dragon. But there was much more. It was a flurry of activities in Oriental markets that exceeds the what we think of as the marketplace today. And Jesus gives us a glimpse. You don't need to turn to it. But in Matthew chapter 11, 16 and 17, he says, Whereunto shall I liken this generation? It is like unto children sitting in the markets and calling unto their fellows and saying, We have piped unto you, and ye have not danced. We have mourned unto you, and ye have not lamented. So we see the marketplace was a playground. It was a place where you went as a family. It was a bit of a community park, if you will. It was the place where children played out what they saw happening in real life, just like children do today. In Bible culture, when someone died, you hired a professional mourner to bring the right music and the right mood to have a mournful experience, to enhance that. And children watched these things, and they saw weddings where people were dancing and jubilant and hooting and hollering. And of course, they came to the marketplace, and they do like our children. They wanted to play church, and they wanted to play funeral, and they wanted to play wedding. And they couldn't get together, and they couldn't agree what to do, and they get to fussing and arguing. And Jesus says, that's what you're like. You're like children that can't get their act together at the marketplace. Well, that was one thing that happened at the marketplace. It was a social function. But another marketplace activity was the social exchange of business people. It was where you went to show your prestige. It seems like the Oriental customs must have learned somewhat, lean somewhat with the values of what we would maybe think of as Central American type culture, where relationships were extremely important and you wanted to be showy about it. Fred Reich says in his book, The Important People, as well as the ordinary people, love to come there to meet friends and greet them in true Oriental fashion, which was showy and time-consuming. Jesus rebuked the scribes in Mark 12:38. He said unto them in his doctrine, beware of the scribes, which love to go in long clothing and love salutations in the marketplace. He said, beware of them. And the talking about the talk of long clothing here, I don't think has anything to do with modesty. I don't think that's the primary focus. They were dressing for show. They were dressing for wealth. And the marketplace was where you could go to show that off. You could dress for pride and you could get a thrill out of it. It was socializing to show how separated you are from the poor and where you are in the status quo. I believe these scribes and Pharisees were maybe the kind that came in the BMWs and the Teslas and the Lamborghinis and, yeah, patronized the high-priced vendors and made sure that others noticed their social rank. But the marketplace was somewhat of a small claims court as well. The serious claims we read many times were resolved at the city gate, or as we would say in our day, the courthouse. But in this case, the marketplace was also known for being a small claims court. If people had some petty grievance, they'd take you to the market. Acts 16 and verse 19. And when her masters saw that the hope of their gains was gone, they caught Paul and Silas and drew them into the marketplace unto the rulers. For Paul and Silas was to market, jiggity jig. We're going to take you, see if we can prosecute you. It was very multifunctioning. And you could get lost in the crowd pretty easily because there was people there for very diverse reasons. And you could be in the mix and not be noticed. But the most important, interesting part of the market to me was the aspect that Matthew 20 seems to represent, I believe. And that was, it was a place of employment opportunity. I don't know what the landholder was doing at the market so many times a day. I don't know if it was harvest time and he was selling his fruit or his vegetables or his grapes and was hosting a stand and kept coming back and restocking it, or I don't know what, it don't say why he was there, but he was there multiple times in the day. Or maybe he was just like us. Some days you just run into one thing after the other that you need and you end up feeling more like a gopher than you're getting anything done. Maybe that was his experience that day. But when he was there, he was noticing the people that needed work. He obviously, and maybe that was part of his reason or a big part of his going, I don't know. But I'm told that there was one job at the marketplace that was known as porter. And it was a good chance if you went to market unemployed and you were looking for work that you could offer yourself to be a porter, where you would carry goods for the merchants into the town square, because many eastern cities, the carriages had to stay outside of the city wall. You were not allowed, I don't know if it was to preserve the streets or if it was a cleanliness factor or why that all was, but for whatever reason, if you were a merchant, your wagon train could come to the city gate, and then you were to hire porters to carry your goods into the center of town, into the market. And I'm not sure how these unemployed people, porter prospects, how they all went about it, but it appears that it very likely was a pretty unfair system. They had a way, I'm pretty sure, of choosing their porters so that they would get the most bang for the buck, as we say today. The big people were the ones that were chosen first because they could carry more stuff for likely the same amount of money. Now keep in mind, if you were there to earn some money as a porter and you were willing to be a human beast of burden, you were willing to take on whatever they piled on you, you were just glad to be chosen. And you were willing to let them load you up. It was hard, grueling work. And you were very vulnerable. You were, first of all, sized up whether you would even be chosen. And then when you were chosen, You didn't know how heavy they were going to load you, usually very heavy. And if you really wanted to get hired, you accepted the load you were given, and you didn't barter about that. You were just glad to be chosen, because many are called. The porter call goes out, but they can only use so many porters, and they will pick this one and this one and this one, and they'll have their reasons why they pick those, because they have options to choose from, and they will pile it high. It's believed that some porters, some of the merchants had saddles to put on shoulders so that they could hang stuff down the side and they could get as much on as possible in one trip into center of town. And I'm borrowing again from the writings of Fred Wright. He says, "What a sight it is to see porters laden down with tremendous burdens on their backs. Sometimes two of these people would stand back to back with their loads resting against each other to rest just a little till they can catch their breath. If they sat down, they likely could not have gotten up on their own. They were loaded that heavy." It was survival of the fittest, this job. If you even got chosen, it was be loaded, be willing to be loaded. It is believed that possibly Jesus' condemnation to the lawyers of his day may have referred to this treatment of the porters in Luke chapter 11, verse 46. And he said, "Woe unto you also, ye lawyers, for ye laid men with burdens grievous to be borne, and ye yourselves touch not the burdens with one of your fingers." And Galatians 6:2 became an enlightened passage to me, as I believe that this may be the picture for the church here, where it says, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in any fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." Bear ye one another's burdens. Make your back available for your brother that got overwhelmed and got loaded beyond what he was able to handle. Bear ye one another's burdens. Stop with him. Lean your back against him. Let him rest his load. Don't make him sit down that he can't get up again. Now I like to... Could it be possible that Jesus was also thinking about the porters in the marketplace when he said those very loving words that we like to quote in Matthew 11:28, when he said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Could that be the picture that Jesus was seeing, these men that were so desperate for work that they were willing to be a beast of burden if they could just get a job? Well, I'd like to let my imagination run wild for just a little bit, and I beg your forbearance, and bear with me in my fictitious musings. I'm an artist, so artists get a little weird sometimes. But when I understood the timestamps here that were associated with this event, when I understood how the marketplace is a very, very busy place and multifunctioning, and you can be lost in the crowd, this passage started opening up to me. And I can only imagine the plight of the last that were hired by this goodman. This was a possible prospect for a person that was unemployed at the marketplace. Very likely their stature and build lended to not getting hired. If they weren't the big ones, if they weren't the husky ones, if they weren't the ones that looked like they had the most possibility for the least amount of money, they likely were not the first ones getting hired. And if I were porters waiting, if I was a porter waiting, who would be picked first? It likely wouldn't be me here tonight. I see people much more fit than me. You would get hired ahead of me, so I'm at a disadvantage right there. Too many things against me. Imagine with me that you and I are the ones at the unemployment office, and we're facing life penniless, poor. We have no job, possibly disadvantaged because there's more capable people all around us. We have no idea how many merchants are going to come and need unloading today. We just hope somebody hires us. We're so poor, we don't have any money to buy groceries for the day. And our wife came along, and she brought all the children along. And they're in the market playing, and they're waiting. They're expecting me to get a job and get some money so they can do some grocery shopping at the market and head home at the end of the day. Maybe our wife's visiting at the market. Maybe she's walking around trying to decide what she'll buy when we get our porter job and come to her with some money. Maybe we missed the 6 o'clock in the morning the first time he was there. Maybe we missed that because we took the time to milk our lone bony cow or other pressing duties. But we got there as soon as we can, just a little beyond the crack of dawn. We were there. But when we got there, there was already some excitement among the porters. They said there was this wealthy businessman. He was here at 6 o'clock. And he offered all that were clustered at the particular gate where he came in. He offered them a penny a day for vineyard work, a whole day's wages, without the insecurity of waiting for a job. Everybody went with him. It was a good offer. Everybody went. The gate just cleaned out. Vineyard work wasn't nearly as grueling as being a human beast of burden. Plus, they were assured a good day's wages. They all went. They didn't second guess him. But you glance around at those who told the story, and you realize that even if you were there, you probably wouldn't have been chosen because so many people larger than you, more capable than you, were still around or had come to the spot because it was an exciting spot to be. And at 9 o'clock, to your surprise, he came around again. You were standing there from 6:30 to 9 o'clock, and you were waiting, and then you hear this man came back again. And this time all he said is, "I'll be fair." He didn't say an amount. He just said, "I'll be fair. Come and work." Stature didn't matter. But again, you were not at the right place. You were standing somewhere else, and you hear the buzz go through the marketplace that a bunch of porters left. They went with this man. He came back. He came in this gate this time. You stand and you wait. Nobody comes to the gate you're standing in that hires you. But amazingly, at 12 o'clock, same story, different street. You heard he was back again. And again, all he said was, "I'll be fair. Come and work for me." And off he goes with the lucky ones. And you weren't one of them. You were on a different street. By this time, the sun is hot. It's beating down on the cobblestone floor of the marketplace. Your sandals hardly feel thick enough in comparison to the smothering heat that's brought on from the desert breezes. You wish you had a real job. You're fanning yourself with your skirt. You're hunched down behind some buildings, trying to get a little shade. But you're ready to jump up at any time a merchant shows up. You're desperate. You're wondering how you're going to buy the groceries today. It's starting to feel a little impossible. How many merchants are going to come after lunch? But you're desperate. You're going to wait. You have a family. You have a wife that's waiting. You're getting nervous. It's going on 1:30. And you haven't found one porter load yet. What will you tell your wife? What about the poor children? They're going to be crying and they're going to be throwing a fit. They don't want to go home without food. But you had some slow days before. You're accustomed to waiting because you're not of the stature that was first pick. You're used to that. You know the bigger fellows may eventually get their quota and they may eventually go home and say they made enough for today. But you hang out till 3 o'clock and the chances are looking slim. You're tired of waiting. And you get up and you walk into the marketplace to see if you can find your wife. Maybe discuss what the next steps are going to be. It's been one of those days. Maybe you can get a load to carry out after the market closes. You start thinking, maybe I should shift to that mode. Maybe I should stop watching the gate. Maybe I should just walk around the stands and see if there's someone may need help carrying their stuff out, get a head start on that possibility. And you run into your wife, and you see her concern in her eyes, and you can see she's fighting back some tears, and the children are getting antsy, and she'd love to get on with life, and she'd love to get home, but you weren't hired. She knows it's not your fault that you weren't chosen. And then to top it off, you hear somebody say that this generous landholder came back, and he took everybody that was standing at gate 3. where you were and just decided to walk into the marketplace. And while you're in the marketplace, lo and behold, he comes. And of course, you had stepped away. The winds are slowing down. The desert heat waves are lessening. It only reminds you that evening is coming and your mission is still unfulfilled. You meet up with your wife again and you discuss a little more. You finally tell her she shall just go home a while. She shall give the children the milk that you got from old Bessie that morning. And you're going to see what you can do with the vendors that are going to have some stuff to carry out. You'll maybe see if you can't do some trading with some carry-out food that nobody else wanted. Maybe at least take home a loaf of bread or two with some sort of trading. But it's now 4:30, and the mothers and the children have left for the most part. The games are over. The marketplace is starting to get quiet, and it's thinning out. And you watch one vendor after another start the preliminaries of closing shop. You think maybe one will ask you to carry something out. You at least hope so. It won't be much, but maybe it'll be enough to get a little bit of bread or some peas for pea soup or something. You look for the other porters, and you're glad to see that many of them have given up. They went home. There's only a few that are as desperate as you are. To your wonder and amazement, you notice a man of means walking with a purpose. And he slows down a little bit and he eyes you up. You assume he's a merchant of some sort coming back to close up shop or something. It's 4:30. And he walks right up to you and he says, "Why are you standing here all day doing nothing?" And you say, "Nobody hired me." It's that simple. I didn't have the opportunity to do anything. I had no opportunity for a job. Many porter calls went out, but I was not chosen. I just couldn't bear the thought of going home empty-handed, so I'm sticking it out till it closes for sure, because no one hired me. And this generous householder says, "I know it's late, but if you really would like work, I'll be fair. Go to my vineyard." You can almost hardly keep from shouting. And he gives you the address, and you start heading to his vineyard. But as you're going, the reality is sinking in. This is past 4:30, and it's almost it's going on 5 o'clock. And it's going to be dark at 6 or 6:30, and that's quitting time. And you feel the darkness settling in already. But maybe if you hurry, maybe you can still get enough done that he'll give you a little bit something reasonable. So you go and you find the work in the vineyard so refreshing. The camaraderie and the spirit is high among the other workers because it's almost quitting time and they're going to get their commitment, their guaranteed wage. And you sigh, "Wow, it sure would have been nice to be here all day." And you think about what you endured that day and all the waiting and all the trying different gates and always being at the wrong place at the wrong time. And you wonder, why couldn't this come together sooner? But you know that's life. And you think, "Well, maybe I'll just keep working. I'll be the last one to report when it's quitting time. I'm going to work. I'm going to get as much done as I can." And your heart sinks when you hear the call go out. It's 6 o'clock. Workers report. End of day. Those of you who have came last, come first. And you're like, "Oh, no. Oh, no. This will hardly have been worth it." But you step up and you reach out your hand. And you're expecting something very meager. And into your hand falls a whole day's wages. Everything you could have wished for. You gasp. You try not to, but it slips out. Because you're that amazed with this man's generosity. And you turn around and you see the early comers. They're craning their necks to see what these part-timers got. And they notice that it's what they were promised. And you start hearing the complaining and the mumbling behind you. "We worked all day. These fellows just came in the last hour. Why are they getting what we were promised? And the landholder replies in my own words, this is a very fair wage for a day's work that you agreed to, and it's up to me what I want to pay those who did not have opportunity. They were so desperate for work that they came without any agreement. I'm going to make their day and meet their needs just like I met yours this morning. If you want to call me unfair, that's up to you. Was the landholder fair? Was he fair? This passage is telling me very clearly that the kingdom of heaven is going to be about reward proportionate to what we endured in life. There will be those that have hundredfold because of what they experienced here in life. And this is also telling me that reward is proportionate to opportunity. Reward is proportionate to opportunity, not the amount of work that we got done, not the volume of work. Yes, we will be rewarded, I believe, for what we do for the Lord, but our entrance into heaven is not dependent on that. It's dependent on the grace of God in our life for pulling us, for giving us opportunity. There are some of us that got an invite into the security and the pleasure of kingdom work and vineyard work very early in life's day. We don't even know what it's like to stand in line and wait for a porter to pick us, and we get passed by all the time. We never lived long enough to do that. I mean, we never experienced that because we got called. We got called early in life. We got called right out of childhood. And we entered into the pleasures of kingdom work and the beauty of the vineyard work. And we had the promise that if we stay faithful, there's heaven waiting for us. Was this landholder fair? With kingdom work comes a lot of security that we take for granted. There is Christian brotherhood and all its blessings. I don't worry about my husband, my wife cheating on me. I don't worry about such things. I don't live with that fear. I don't live with suspicion with my closest friends that one of these moments the ripoff is going to present itself and I'll be left sitting. I don't live with that fear. My wife and I don't have separate bank accounts so that it won't be so messy in the likelihood that there's a divorce going to be coming at some point, because statistically that's just the way it goes. And eventually I'll find a note on the counter when I come home from work that my wife is gone. We don't have the poverty and hardship of a home ruined by addictions and drugs and alcohol. And we're raised as wide-eyed, fearful children, the ones like we see come to Bible ministry. We were allowed into the vineyard. We were invited into the vineyard very early. We were at a place where the landholder came by, and we had the opportunity to step into vineyard work. We got in already at 6 o'clock a.m. because nothing of our doing. We were just at the right place at the right time. We were born into a home where we were introduced to Christ and to the kingdom of heaven, and we could just step right into it. The other big part in this story, Jesus is letting us know that heaven is no respecter of persons or status quo. No matter who that householder saw at the market or when their paths crossed, he said, come and I'll be fair. Just come and I'll be fair. I was sitting with a young man this week, and he was very short in stature, and he talked about how it's very difficult for him in volleyball to have good spikes. And probably a little bit of the porter pitcher. You know, he's probably not the first one chosen. But you know, when it relates to the kingdom of heaven, when our opportunity comes, it doesn't matter our stature, it doesn't matter our background. It doesn't matter what happened to life up to this point. None of that matters. The kingdom, the householder, the generous householder is saying tonight, just come and work in my vineyard and I will be fair. I will love you and you're going to be blessed. You're going to be blessed. In fact, the more difficult your life experience, the greater is going to be your reward. I will take note of it. If the trumpet sounds tonight, the oldest Christian here, and the one that responded when the invitation is given in a few minutes, can share heaven together as equals. Isn't that a beautiful picture? A beautiful picture. God is that fair. God is that fair. This story here reminds us of two other sobering realities of the eternal world. And that is that sometime there is going to be a 6 o'clock call, and it will be the last one. Sometime, time is going to be no more. And God is going to say, it's 6 o'clock, Jesus, go and get the church. The ones that just got saved and the ones that have been saved for a long time, go get them all and just bring them home. I got a reward for them. It's going to be great. The rapture of the church is only for those who have answered the call in the marketplace. Only those that were willing to step aside from all the allure of the marketplace and say, I'm willing to work in the vineyard. I'll do what I reasonably can in the vineyard because I know he'll be fair. If God is so generous and fair to those who did not have opportunity and took the opportunity only when they got it, what do you think his justice and his fairness will look like for those who did not take the opportunity when they had it, and they spurned the opportunity time after time after time because they weren't willing? They did not want to step out of that marketplace. They liked driving their Lamborghinis. They liked the show they were getting there. They liked whatever it was that the marketplace offered them. And they didn't want to go work in the vineyard. And they said, no, I don't want to work in your vineyard. I'm not really here for employment. I'm here to have fun. Are we ready tonight for the 6 o'clock call? It's going to happen. The trumpet is going to sound. You know, we can live like time is just going to keep on going. And we're seeing a lot of things happening right now, and it just makes me wonder, how close are we to the trumpet sounding? How close are we to that generous householder saying, it's 6 o'clock, it's 6 o'clock. Those that have stepped in the kingdom are in the kingdom, and those that haven't are not. We won't get to heaven by coming and sitting in a Sunday service or in a meeting house like this, all dressed up, modestly, veils on our heads. We will get to heaven if we answer the call and we step into the vineyard and we do God's will for our life and we deal with the sin that is there. You know, we can hide behind so many things in this wonderful culture that we have. And we can get our way around. We can put our suits on and put our dress, and the world respects us for the most part, and they trust us, and we can navigate life on the assumption that we're good people. The world will assume that. And I had a very, very vivid awakening, I guess I'll call it that, many, many years ago at the Lebanon prison. It just never hit me like it did then. But there was a man that I was going to visit there. His name was John Copenhaver. And I would go in to see him. We were still allowed contact visits back then. But when I would go with my suit on And I would go with my Bible in hand, and my name was on the pastoral list. I was allowed in. And I would just simply step up to that dark window, close enough that I could faintly see the person inside, and I would say, "I'm Howard Horst from Elm Street Mennonite Church, and I'm here to see John Copenhaver." And very soon, the little buzzer, the door beside me would buzz, and I knew that it's unlocked. I would open that one, and I would go into this little holding pen until the next door would buzz, and I'd just wait till they would let me in, and then I'd go and sit at a table, and I'd wait for John to come. And that happened many, many times. But one day, I was in Lebanon, and I just felt a burden to stop in and see how John's doing. And I was in my work clothes. And I came in, and I did my usual thing. I stepped up to the window and said the same things I always said, but I didn't have my Bible in hand, and I didn't have my suit on. And they looked at me very suspicious, like, "Yeah, you're a pastor." And I said, "My name is in the book." They had a little book. And I could faintly see them through the window, two men. They went back to their desk, and they were opening the drawer, and they got out their pastor book, and they were looking. They were looking for my name. I saw them moving their finger down carefully. They came back to the window, and they said, "Howard, what did you say your name is again?" I said, "And the church?" I said, it's in there. My name is in there." And they went back, and they looked again. And after a while, they came back, and they said, "Yeah, your name is in there." And the door buzzed like it normally did. But I stood in that little holding area waiting for the next buzz, and I just got a picture. Someday, it's going to be the book of life. My name is either in or it's not in. Either I answered the call and I'm working in God's kingdom, or I'm enjoying myself in the marketplace. You know, when we get to heaven, I can't put this on, and I can't try and fool God with anything. It's going to be my deeds and what I've done that's going to be there that I'll have to defend. Is your name in the book of life tonight? Is your name there? Have you answered the call? Have you stepped into the kingdom work? Have you trusted the generous householder when he says he'll be fair, he will be fair? Do you trust that he loves you in spite of whatever it is that is nasty inside of you that needs to be dealt with and can be dealt with by the shed blood of Jesus Christ? Tonight I'd like to give you an opportunity one more time to respond to the call in the marketplace. Come and work in the vineyard. Because I know that Jesus will be very, very fair and is no respecter of persons. What shall we sing for an invitation?